Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from March 17th, 1999.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening or good morning, wherever you may be across this great land of ours, commercially from the Tahitian and Hawaiian island chains out west, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north all the way to the pole, and worldwide on the internet, thanks to Broadcast.com and Intel. And just in case you have not yet begun to participate, it's free. If you've got a computer, you just go to my website, which is www.artbell.com, and you'll see download the G2 player. It's called the G2 player. And you install it. It takes all of about 2 minutes into your computer. You go back to my website, click on streaming video, and God, ain't technology wonderful. You get to see me sitting here doing the show, actually in movement. I call it Not Quite TV. And you get to hear the show as well in very high quality audio. They really have come a long way. As you know, we are the testing launching platform for this technology. And we are in the middle of a 3-month experiment with Intel and Broadcast.com. And now you know what they're doing? They're archiving the shows. That's right. They're archiving the video shows. Incredibly, they're doing that. I don't know how they're doing it. They must have a lot of disk drive space. That's all I can say. Which means that during the day, you can actually not just listen to, but watch the entire 5-hour program by, again, going to my website and clicking on archives, you know, the streaming video archives. I don't know how the hell they're doing that. They must have, even with today's technology, disk drives the size of my house or something. But you can actually do it. You can watch and listen to the whole 5-hour program. It is amazing. Amazing. And Broadcast.com is doing that. So, you know, if you're at work or something, yeah, like your boss would really be happy to see me cavorting on your computer at work, I suppose, huh? So maybe you should just listen. But if you get a chance, you know, the archives are now there by the day. It's amazing to me. All right, Richard Hoagland continues to improve, and I got this fax today from Scott in Boston, who says the following regarding Richard's amazing situation. Morning, Art. I work the 11 to 7 shift as an RN at Boston Hospital. Boston, we're too busy to catch a lot of your show live, so I tape it on Real Talk and play it back. Yeah, there you go. Point is, I have just reviewed last night's show and was amazed with the interview given by Mr. Hoagland. You see, I've attended many cardiac cases and can attest that arterial sclerosis, or narrowing of the arteries due to plaque, is generally a systemic problem, especially problematic in peripheral vessels, as in the feet. Truly, I tell you that in my experience, it is odd that his occlusion was so limited and so specific. And without reading too far between the lines, I'm sure you can understand what he's talking about. Now, finally, I've been talking about this for years and years and years and years. Finally, our federal government appears to be budging on marijuana. In fact, according to the Associated Press, marijuana has medical benefits for people suffering from cancer and AIDS and should undergo scientific trials to see how it works best, according to a panel of medical experts. A report to the federal government, thank you for not lying. Finally, the drug remains illegal under federal law, despite ballot measures approving its use in Alaska, Arizona, California, Nevada, Oregon, and Washington. This new report is going to certainly sharpen the debate over the use of marijuana. The Institute of Medicine, an affiliate of the National Academy of Sciences, said marijuana's active ingredients can ease pain, nausea, and vomiting. It urged the development of a national standard to use the drug, such as an inhaler. Even our nation's drug czar, said that a debate over smoking marijuana in America might be in order. Well, thank God for small favors. How many years has it been that they've said that it's connected to more drug use and all the rest of it? It was the big lie. It really was the big lie. And so you can consider this the official beginning of a movement to change. When you hear about an official study going to the federal government saying, oh, gee, we were wrong. Because they always said marijuana had no medical benefit. All the drugs are said that. No medical benefit. And it leads to other drugs. Well, now today we have a study, finally, thank God, saying exactly the opposite. And I'm not in favor of marijuana. But I am in favor of the truth. And damn their hides, they've been lying their asses off to us for years about this. And I've been calling this for years now. And finally, somebody comes forward and tells the truth. 1 point for the federal government, and they don't get a lot of points. Headline, weapons labs get new security. As you know, they're concerned about whether the Chinese may have nuclear secrets that they wormed from us at Los Alamos National Labs. Well, why should we have to see a story saying Los Alamos, one of our top secret nuclear warhead technology joints, is getting new security? What the hell? If ever there's going to be security anywhere, it ought to be here. A retired Army general who pleaded guilty to conduct unbecoming, for having affairs with four subordinates' wives, was reprimanded Wednesday and fined $10,000. I wonder if that gets split evenly among the husbands. Probably not. Be kind of a kick in the teeth anyway, be a couple grand apiece, right? The Swiss-English balloon team was about 300 miles from Jamaica late Wednesday night, and they need to catch the next jet stream over the Eastern Caribbean. That's dicey. You either catch the jet stream or you miss it, and if you miss it, it's a balloon ride over. And the way the jet stream's been acting lately, they must be in for one hell of a ride. Gee, here's a surprise. The Weather Service's annual spring flood forecast Wednesday pointed to, look out, North Dakota and the Pacific Northwest as potential danger spots. The area of greatest flooding potential along the Red River in North Dakota and Devil's Lake, North Dakota, each year, floods kill between 100 and 140 Americans and cause an average of $4.5 billion in damage. Now, I looked for this last night, and I couldn't find it, but I found it. So I'm going to read this to you because I thought it was interesting. As you know, Ed Dames has made a lot of comments years ago about frogs. Then pretty soon we had deformed frogs. And you know how some people are about Ed Dames. I mean, they nicknamed him Dr. Doom for a reason. Well, he said frogs were going to get deformed years ago, and they did. And here's somebody who listened to Ed Dames. He said, personally, Art, I can just barely handle listening to Ed Dames. Scares me. But this time he got really the best of me on Saturday morning. And so I thought I would share this story with you, Art. On Saturday morning, immediately following your show at about 6:15 a.m. Eastern, that was right after the show, right? I was thinking of all the things that Ed talked about, especially the newt-looking beings that he's trying to communicate with. You guys also talked about the horrible-looking creature or entity that was actually, he said, a mosquito on the lens of the camera, and you mentioned again that frogs are deformed. So, you know, I couldn't help but think that maybe the frogs and newt-looking creatures are somehow possibly related, and the frogs have sent out a message to the newts that the Earth is dying. So, being heavy into that thought, I head down to my basement. Ta-da, right away, you know, bad news, right? Going to the basement. I head down to my basement to put my clothes in the dryer, and as I'm heading back upstairs, I see what appears to be a rock on my basement floor. As I approach it, the rock moves. My heart begins pounding. I move in on it, not like my unconscious cat, and guess what? It's a toad. Well, my first thought was, how did that thing get in here? And it had to have been here since last fall. So, I do the obvious and try to remove it and find myself in a wrestling match with this 3-inch, mean, ugly, pissed-off-looking toad. It scared me. As I finally scooped its little bod into an old cereal box, I felt the anger from this thing. I was angry. I then proceed to bring it to the front door, and I toss the toad outside with the temperature out there. I say to myself, that's it for him. Right before we get to the door, it takes a leak in the box and leaks onto my bare foot, and I freak out. It was so gross. At this point, I toss the frog about 15 feet into the snow, and it was doing a nosedive. That's it for him, I thought. So he killed the frog, right? Anyway, I immediately get in the shower and scrub the toad's anger off my foot and think to myself, that pissed off toad pissed on me to piss me off, right? Obviously, when I got out of the shower, I wanted another look at the angry toad, you know, dead. So I look out the front door, and the toad's gone. I then open the door to get a better look, and that angry toad is right at the door, inside of a footprint in the snow, all scrunched up. Now I'm really getting spooked, and I've got to go to work. So I go out, and I toss the toad again, check it 45 minutes later before I leave. Well, now it's frozen dead belly up, so I go to work. When I get home Saturday night, the toad is gone. The temperature had risen to above 32 degrees during the day, and my first thought was, well, when do we get round two? Art, I'll never look at a toad or a frog the same way again. It was weird, especially right after hearing you and Ed all night Friday. Well, I can understand that, certainly. What are the odds of me coming into contact with a toad in March in New Hampshire? Pretty weird, Art. Phil in Glen, New Hampshire. You know, that sounds an awful lot like something that Alfred Hitchcock... you know, about a half-hour episode of Alfred Hitchcock years ago, doesn't it? The Toad That Wouldn't Die.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price. The package includes podcasting, which automatically downloads shows for you, and the iPhone app. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. That's over 1,000 shows for you to collect and enjoy. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up. You never know what you'll hear on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
You know, there is terrorism out there. So in an effort to try to fight it or combat it, we give up these rights. I'm convinced that there are groups out there, sinister, powerful groups, that would create this terror to continue to control us.
I think you're absolutely correct. But of course, anybody that's followed the process of government throughout history, once a government has been given a certain amount of power, it always seeks more. And to suggest that our government is different because it's America, I guess that just shows how historically ignorant the American people have become. Because in a real sense, these things are our fault. Americans are, in fact, now trading liberty for security. every day this is going to happen now in our future, that we're going to allow this. It's just a matter of time.
Now, let's go back to the night of March 17th, 1999, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right, well, listen. As you know, tonight, coming up in the next hour, we've got William Thomas here, and the contrail story couldn't be bigger. I mean, it really absolutely couldn't be bigger, except now it'll get a little bit bigger. Talk about getting your memory jogged. You know who's getting interested in the contrail story? Linda Moulton Howe. That's who. And it fell on me like a brick from above. My second UFO sighting, also thankfully with my wife, was of a disc, a silver disc. Where? In a contrail. Do you remember that, folks? In a contrail. And I didn't think two things about it. In fact, I've got somebody from Missouri sent me a photograph of the silver disc they saw in the contrail. Exactly the same as mine. It's up on my website. And I didn't put that together with the contrail story until I got this fax. Linda's going to tell the story here at the bottom of the hour, Linda Moulton Howe. It's contrail related. It was faxed to me, and I had Linda contact the gentleman, and she has done an interview with him. And that's going to be coming up here in a few minutes. A silver discs, flying discs in contrails. Now, why would discs be in contrails? That's 1, 2, 3. That's myself. That's the person in Missouri who sent me the photograph. You can see on my website. Keith, if you would, get it fairly prominent for tonight. If you can do that, maybe put up a temporary thing so people can find it easily. The contrail photo, damnedest thing. And then, of course, I took and when I say contrail photo, Keith, I mean the one with the disc in it from Missouri, and the contrail photograph that I took above the Pahrump Valley. If we can make both of those things particularly visible for tonight, they're so relevant. And what you're going to hear here at the bottom of the hour is so relevant. Guess what? One more item that I've just got to get out. And that is that I have been getting flooded lately with these chicken skin producing stories of children 2 and 3 years old saying things that could only be attributed to an adult in a prior life, because they are said as the adult would have said them. Now, why would children be evidence of reincarnation? Answer, they have not been conditioned yet out of the belief that it could be so. And so they appear to be evidence of reincarnation, and I've just been riveted with these stories. Tomorrow night, yes, there is an expert on exactly this. Her name is Carol Bauman. It's Bauman or Bauman? Bauman, I bet. Carol Bauman, who wrote a book called, are you ready? Children's Past Lives. And she is generally regarded probably as the expert on this in the United States, I would say. And so she has agreed to be my guest tomorrow night. I thought you'd be interested in that. I'm telling you, these stories are absolutely astounding. Nothing short of astounding. And now we've got a guest close in tomorrow night who's going to talk about exactly that. So if you're ready for a night of chicken skin, you'll get it. You'll sure get it tomorrow night. Tonight, though, I don't know what kind of skin you'd call the skin produced by these contrail story. Our guest is going to be an investigative reporter named William Thomas. And there may be news tonight about lab results, you know, that kind of thing. So it's starting to get very serious. This whole contrail story that I wished in my mind wouldn't be true. Well, remember Dr. Lorraine Day the other night? I see you do. I asked her whether the U.S. would spray or conduct biological warfare on its own people, and there wasn't even a beat miss. She said yes, oh, of course, and began to cite examples of it. So if you're a doubting Thomas, keep the dial planted where you've got it while we get in more trouble. This is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 17th,
up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories stored, and to use them to help us.
Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 17th, 1999.
Well, I'll tell you, I do wonder what Y2K is going to be, don't you? Whether it's going to be a bust, a yawn, or whether something really serious is going to occur. We know one thing for sure, the weather is worsening, and for a million reasons, you know, people are getting ready. They have a sense to get ready, and they're right. They should be.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player, and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think. As a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and 2 weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. Now, let's go back to the night of March 17th, 1999, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Linda Moulton Howe has won awards for her environmental documentary. She's been a science reporter for us, investigator in crop circles, animal mutilations, and so much more. With us for years now, and tonight, keyword, contrails and Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, welcome.
Hi, Art.
Hi. How in the world did you get involved in the contrail story?
Well, it was at the end of February when I was in Sedona, Arizona, to speak at a conference there, and several of us went outside to go to lunch. But we were stopped cold by what was in the sky. A large silver airplane at very high altitude was making a perfect and very large white X in a very blue sky that stretched from the western horizon all the way up to and past the zenith. It was a huge X. And then we realized that there were other large X's in the sky, and within a couple of hours, it was totally overcast with clouds, and this was Sedona, Arizona, desert community. A couple of days later in Phoenix, I saw similar large X's in a blue sky that became overcast.
Mm-hmm.
I got home the first week of March and was interviewed by KCMO Radio in Kansas City, Missouri, where I learned the Mike Murphy Show had devoted its entire program on March 4th to callers describing odd contrail patterns that they had seen in Kansas, Missouri, and the surrounding states.
Mike Murphy's a great guy and a good friend.
Yeah, and he's very intrigued by this, too.
Mm-hmm.
And after my interview, I received several dozen faxes and phone calls from KCMO listeners,
yes,
including this one from a Kansas City, Missouri resident who watched seven contrails forming at 8 a.m. on March 4th.
In fact, I even called Murphy's producer to tell him. I said, man, look outside. Look at this. I said, I'm not no nut or nothing, but this is too weird.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one going from, it would be from north to the south, and it was very large. It took almost the entire, what's the word I'm looking for? Is it the entire radius of the sky? I mean, it went as far as the eye could see almost to the north and was going south. And it looked like it had just been laid or whatever, however you would word that. It had just happened.
Right.
And then it started to dispense a little from the inside going out. So in other words, it was getting wider from east to west, of course, and it started getting wider and wider, and then the next, probably 2 or 3 minutes later, it may not have even been that long, probably a minute later, I saw one in the north sky, probably up, if you were doing it on a clock, probably up to, say, 3 o'clock,
mm-hmm,
and it was going from west to east.
And how many planes did you see making this?
I didn't see a total of these lines, because I'm driving, of course, and I was just kind of watching it. It looked to me like there were about seven lines happening at once to me.
Mm-hmm.
There was, now we'll just talk about yesterday. And again, they did that, then another one went in a more, trying to get my direction straight, from, if I was heading north, so it would have been from a more westerly direction going southeast. Almost at an angle. It wasn't a direct cross, and it wasn't like an X. It was more of, I guess what I'm trying to say, it didn't seem like it was a real pattern, except the lines always ended up crossing one another.
Okay.
And there were about seven of them. There was one night, and I wish to God I would have written the date down.
Let me ask you, though, about the seven lines. Could you actually see aerial craft making these seven lines?
On one, I could see it, but it looked to me like they're pretty high up, and it just looked like something big. But, I mean, it's quite a ways away, so I don't think without binoculars or a telescope or something, you could really get a clear picture of it.
Mm-hmm, okay.
But, I mean, I couldn't tell color or anything like that. I never pulled off the road. I was driving.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I was just,
mm-hmm,
I don't get into this stuff with it too much, I'm kind of a family guy, I just kind of do my thing, but this has blown my mind.
Right.
I mean,
well,
it is. It's,
something's happening.
Something weird, and I don't know what it is, but something's going on.
And that's what I heard from dozens and dozens of people, that same kind of consternation of seeing repeated patterns of what seem to be some kind of odd-shaped contrails in the sky.
Well, I'm hearing from dozens and thousands, actually.
Yeah, and I've talked now with a couple of pilots who have said the same thing, that some of the X's might result from the normal crossing corridors of military and civilian air traffic, but that would not explain what he just described of seven contrails seeming to form at the same exact time and the seemingly deliberate creation of that big, huge X in Sedona by one plane that we watched make the X. Now, yesterday, March 16th, Art, you received a fax from Matthew Durand, who's lived in Albuquerque for 19 years,
right,
about seeing a silver ball moving in a contrail. And you told me about your and Ramona's own sighting of a silver disc in a contrail 2 years ago.
The whole thing fell on me like a cinder block when I got that fax, Linda. And then I remembered, damn, I had a photograph from Missouri of exactly what I saw. It involved a contrail. And my original sighting involved a contrail. And then it's like the light bulb went on. And I said, oh, my God, what we saw may relate, and I know it's a loose association, but I did see a UFO in a contrail, and then it took off like a bat out of hell. It was definitely moving behind a jet in a contrail.
And that was 2 years ago.
Yes, ma'am.
And that raises the implication of how long has something been going on that perhaps these silver disks have either been involved with or are monitoring, which is a question that comes up with Mr. Durand, who I interviewed just a few hours ago about his remarkable sighting at 11:40 a.m. March 16th, yesterday, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Here is Matthew Durand.
All right, here we go again, folks.
And I had just got away from my computer for a minute to go get a cup of coffee when I happened to look out my east-facing window. Actually, they're quite a ways up. They're about 20 feet up from the floor of the living room. And I noticed that there was a set of contrails, and there was an airplane leaving a new set parallel and not very far from the others. So I grabbed my binoculars, which were handy, and looked up at the plane, watched it finish making the contrail, you know, as far as the view in my window was concerned. And then I noticed a small silver ball or sphere moving around in the contrail. I watched it for approximately 6 to 7 seconds moving in the contrail. Then it turned out of the contrail, went between the two sets of contrails, so it was just like a small space of blue sky between the two sets of contrails, and it just stayed stationary for approximately anywhere between 4 to 6, 7 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, could you see it more clearly through the binoculars?
Yeah, that's the funny part. It wasn't visible at all without the binoculars. You could not see it. I looked away just for a moment, you know, in that general direction. I could not see it with the naked eye.
And when you looked into the binoculars, what exactly were you seeing?
A fairly small silver sphere in relation to the size of the airplane that I watched making the contrail. It was significantly smaller.
And when you say sphere, do you mean it was perfectly round or was it disc-shaped?
It was perfectly round.
Mm-hmm.
And it was unmoving?
Like I said, it was moving in the contrail and then it moved out between the two sets of contrails and it just stayed stationary for the remainder of the time that I saw it. And then about the end of the, anywhere between 4 to 6, 7 minutes, whatever it was, it shot straight up. And it was gone. I mean, just in an instant, it just accelerated unbelievably.
Did the plane itself seem to have any motion as if it were aware of the presence of this object?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. It was well out of my view when I noticed the sphere.
So would your general impression be what of this sphere being there?
I've never seen anything like it. I don't think we have any aircraft that look like that, so I would have to classify it as unidentified.
And then the question is, are these spheres in the process of monitoring, or are they somehow involved?
I was wondering that, and I mentioned that in my email to Art, that perhaps whoever controls these spheres is perhaps taking an interest in what these contrails are, what they're for.
Can you describe further why the contrails themselves grab your attention?
Well, you know, I've lived here in New Mexico my whole life, and you get used to this big blue sky, and these contrails are not normal. They linger far too long, and then they spread out, and they tend to cloud over the entire sky eventually. You know, usually in the last, say, 3 months, I've noticed it being more prevalent. And I've actually watched them start at, 8 in the morning, and they continue all day. And by the time they're done, usually the sky's pretty well clouded over.
Now, when
they don't look right either. Like I said, they linger far too long. And one particular instance, I was at a soccer tournament with one of my boys, and I looked up at the sun, and through the contrails that were spreading out, you could see like an oil. It looked like an oily ring. It just didn't look right. And I pointed it out to my wife, and she said basically the same thing. You know, that doesn't look right. It had kind of an, you know how oil looks when it's on water?
Right.
Kind of a iridescent quality to it. It looked very similar.
Now, did you mean that you have watched the same plane make contrails from 8 o'clock in the morning throughout the day?
Oh, several planes. It was more than one.
But it wasn't like normal military or civilian traffic that would be crossing in the sky?
I wouldn't consider it, no. One of the reasons for it is you see the contrails start on one end of on the east or west side of Albuquerque, and they end right over there's a mountain range that borders on the east, and they always cut it off right there. They don't continue past the mountains.
And so what you're describing are contrails that are essentially extending from one horizon nearly to the other horizon.
Yeah, precisely.
And have you seen the large X patterns that have been reported in so many states?
As a matter of fact, yesterday there was several of them.
So some of the contrails that you saw associated with that silver disk were the X-shaped patterns?
Yes. Well, the two that I saw while looking at the sphere were parallel to one another. They weren't X-shaped. I saw the X-shaped ones later in the afternoon. Obviously, after seeing that, I was pretty much watching the skies for the remainder of the afternoon.
Have you called anybody in the military or at airports to ask about the contrail formations?
No, I haven't, and that's something that having, Kirtland Air Force Base and Sandia National Laboratories right here, in the city, I'm not so sure I'd get an answer anyway.
That's right.
Well, I think it would be worth trying. It's one of the things I'm going to try to encourage people in the radio to call airports, call various military installations, and ask if they have knowledge about who or what are making all of these contrails.
Well, I'd be willing to try that, I suppose. Now, I've seen contrails before, but they just don't look right. There's just an odd quality about them, the fact that they don't dissipate, and, being as arid as this place is, usually they dissipate very quickly.
And, Art, I think that is, without question, the first and only interview we've heard about so far, isn't it, of somebody actually seeing through binoculars something that was a round silver disc associated with a contrail?
No. I mean, I've got a picture from Missouri on my website, Linda, of a contrail with a silver disc.
Okay. So you do have another one.
See, 2 years ago, I told my story.
Yeah.
Somebody sent me a photograph and said, "My God, Art, guess what? Not only did I see what you saw, but I've got a photograph." Actually, two of them.
Okay.
And if you look up on my website, Linda, There it is. A contrail with a silver disc first close in and then moving out.
Okay. Did that person who took the photograph, did they do a discussion with you on the air about it?
Oh, yes, they did.
Okay. Well, then what we're beginning to see here is...
It's a bit of a pattern.
Yeah, is a pattern. And there is one more piece to this that I would be very interested in, whether any listeners tonight have ever seen in the sky anything, whether it was at sunrise or sunset, that looked almost like symbols in the sky. I have talked now with a couple of people, one a pilot, one a woman living in the Missouri-Kansas area, and they both have seen what they said did not look like the X's or the cornrows or any of these parallels, but looked like actual of either symbols or scribbles in the sky that they couldn't relate to an airplane making. I'm very interested in that. I'm also interested in this issue of whether or not there are any circular patterns seen almost as residue in them.
Yes, Linda. My contrail photo.
Yes.
Remember I told you I saw one?
Yes.
Did you look at that?
Yes, and what I'm wondering is if other listeners, if anybody else has seen that anywhere else in the country, where we might start to get some feedback about these other patterns that may or may not relate to some kind of frequency experimentation in the atmosphere. That's why I'm...
Something's going on, Linda. Something is going on, that's for damn sure.
Yes, and it is helpful to hear from people wherever you've seen something anomalous. And I'm going to have a fascinating report on Dreamland on Sunday about these enormous rings in the trees up in northern Canada. And that in itself is another one of these mysteries of all of these various patterns, ground and sky.
Linda, thank you so very much.
Well, thank you. And
see you Sunday on Dreamland, huh?
That's right. And onward with further details from William Thomas.
All right. Indeed. If the phone gods allow and William Thomas is ready, he's coming up next. And I'm telling you, folks, I would have said, you know, a few years ago, contrails. Of course there's contrails, dummy. There's jets up there. But I'm afraid that I'm now beginning to believe there really is more to this story. Sorry to say. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 17th, 1999. Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired March 17th, 1999.
Well, you know, There may be things in the sky, but they may not be the spirits you think they are. Wouldn't have been too long ago if somebody had said to me, oh my God, Art, the contrails, they're going to kill us. I'd have said, lockup time, white coat, bring in the counselors, we've got a problem here. But I'm sorry, I'm coming around to believe that there really is something going on. Last hour, Linda Moulton Howe outlined Mike Murphy in Kansas City on KCMO and the show he did and the response she got, and then somebody else who saw a silver disc in a contrail, a very, very articulate report. I saw a silver disc in a contrail. Then somebody from Missouri sent me a picture of a silver disc in a contrail. I had my sighting, then they sent me that. It's up on the website right now. Then I had a contrail over my own home, which just was totally bizarre. And it's up on the website right now. And coming up in a moment to try and string all of this together for us is William Thomas. And I'll tell you more about William Thomas. I don't know if you could say he's the guy that got all of this started, but he certainly is a brave person out on the edge reporting the story that, if you sit and listen, will astound, and if the contrails don't do it, the story certainly will sicken you. Stay right where you are.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player, and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think. As a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and 2 weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
There's got to be a point where people say, enough is enough. But my perception is that this is moving at a very rapid clip now. It's almost as if they think that they're out of time.
It seems like they've got to hurry up and speed things up, or something's going to happen. It's all about money, power, and public control. And until we wake up and wake up all the people around us, it's going to get worse.
Now, let's go back to the night of March 17th, 1999, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
You know, when I first approached this story, I approached it with real caution, with kind of the attitude that when I first read about it, with kind of the attitude that I described a little while ago. Contrails? You idiot! Of course there's contrails. There's always been contrails. Since we've been flying in the jet age, there have been contrails. I'm really sorry to say that I'm becoming a believer reluctantly and sadly, underlined sadly. Now comes William Thomas, an independent journalist who learned his craft on the streets of Milwaukee, Chicago, and Woodstock during the 60s. He reported for the Environmental News Service while serving as a member of a 3-man Gulf Environmental Emergency Response Team during the, and immediately following, actually, the Gulf War. His 30-minute Gulf War documentary, Echo War, won the 1991 U.S. Environmental Film Festival Award for Best Documentary Short. Segments from Echo War have aired extensively on Canada's CBC, as well as appearing on CNN and NBC television. Specializing in military operations, alternative health, the environment, Thomas's editorial comments have appeared in the Globe and Mail, Toronto Star, Vancouver Sun, Times, columnist newspapers, as well as Monday, Earth Island Journal, and Echo Decision magazines. He is a frequent guest on American Talk Radio, and of course, CBC. His writing and photography have appeared in more than 55 publications, translations into French, Dutch, and Japanese. He's won the 1989 Western Canada Magazine Feature Awards, the 1990 Canadian Weekly Periodical's Best Feature Award, the 1997 BC and Yukon Community Newspaper Award for Excellence in Outdoor Writing, and the 1998 BC Outdoor Award for Best Outdoor Writing that Made a Difference. William Will Thomas currently lives and works in the Gulf Islands of British Columbia. Here is William Thomas. Will, welcome to the program, back to the program, actually.
Thank you, Art. It's a pleasure to be back with you.
Well, about a million faxes and emails under the bridge since last time you were on. The story has exploded all around us, Will, all around you. It is an explosive story. Boy, is it explosive. I mean, my emails, my faxes are just jammed. We have hundreds and thousands of photographs of contrails that are suspicious. Now, I think what we need to do, because a lot of people's attention has suddenly begun to focus on the story, is that we've got to backtrack a little bit, and you've got to tell us how you became involved, how you became suspicious, how you investigated, and what you found, because normally, as I said, if you were to talk about contrails being dangerous, most Americans would go, lock that guy in a rubber room. Contrails are contrails. Give me a break. Right?
Contrails are sometimes contrails, and it appears, Art, that sometimes they're not contrails. And as an investigative journalist for some 30 years, I am excruciatingly aware that every time I report on this story, I put my reputation and credibility on the line, and I'm ready to do that tonight with some new information. But as you say, let's start at the beginning.
Sure.
And catch people up.
Yes, because so many of them would have just sort of dismissed it first time around or half heard it, and suddenly it's like it's taken all of a sudden, and you've got people's attention now.
Well, this story got my attention 8 or 9 weeks ago when my life was turned completely upside down and taken over with a story, as you say, that has got real legs. I've never seen anything like this story
in
30 years.
Yep.
8 weeks ago, I got a call from my managing editor at Environment News Service saying, check out this guy named William Wallace down in Washington State. Mr. Wallace reports that he has been watching jet aircraft, very large aircraft, flying back and forth over his remote mountain cabin for hours and days, laying down a grid-like pattern of contrails that he says has made himself and his wife Anne very ill, as well as a neighbor living nearby.
Mm-hmm.
I finally got a hold of Mr. William Wallace. We talked. He sent me a video he had taken. As a former member of the military and a former pilot, I was quite attentive and then disturbed to see something very unusual in that, yes, indeed, these large aircraft, which turned out to be KC-10, KC-135 type tanker aircraft. We managed to get a positive ID on them later.
Oh, that's important. KC-135s, those are refueling craft. And what else?
KC-10, another refueling craft.
Both refueling.
Two different configurations of airplane, but they both refuel fighters in flight.
Right.
Okay, so we have the tankers going back and forth in this video, and I'm watching what appeared to be contrails spread out, and instead of dissipating like contrails almost always do within 45 seconds or a minute, these hung in the sky for minutes and hours. They spread out and they formed an overcast. And I watched in somewhat disbelief a clear blue sky become totally overcast. What was going on here? Well, Mr. Wallace suggested I contact Dr. Greg Hanford down in Bakersfield, California. Mr. Hanford, Dr. Hanford, had been watching these contrails for years, had invested in some expensive photographic equipment and binoculars, and he was floored by a phenomenon, literally floored, Art, because he got very sick, and so did his receptionist and other people in his office and friends, and suddenly the hospitals in Bakersfield in the last few months have been jammed. It's made the local papers.
What kind of sick, William?
We're talking upper respiratory ailments that doctors are hesitant to call the flu because their lab tests are not coming back influenza. All they can say for certain is it's some kind of infection, upper respiratory. It is acute.
They've
it
called
brings
it,
people they, into emergency
now
rooms.
They've called it flu-like symptoms.
Precisely.
And also, one other little thing. People began sending me information on, hey, Art, there's this study that they're advertising on our local radio or TV station that says, if you have flu-like conditions, call 1-888-I-GOT-FLU or 1-800-I-GOT-FLU. I forget what it is. And I'll be damned. I picked up the phone, and they're doing studies, and they're offering people who participate in the study, in some cases, free treatment, Will. What do you make of that?
I find this very suggestive, Art, when we look further into I Got Flu and another one is lungs.
Yep.
We find that you can qualify for the treatment, certainly only if you have specific symptoms.
Yes.
You have contracted those symptoms within a certain radius of other exposures,
yes,
within a certain time frame. Otherwise, you're not qualified for studies that take up to 5 weeks or longer.
Mm-hmm.
Gee, that seems much longer than most flus I know of, and it seems very similar to a bioweapon simulation tracking program. I've noted those 1-800 and 887 numbers across the United States, and as I followed the trail from Mr. Wallace and Dr. Hanford, I began calling and emailing people from literally one coast to the other. Some 43 states have now reported in. I have interviewed or received reports from more than 400 people, including police officers, pilots, military personnel, defense specialists, and folks who lived near airports for many years, been in the military for years, who know very well what a contrail is and have been telling me, and you, these are not contrails, and hey, we are sick, and everybody around us is very sick indeed.
And Linda Howe, the night before, I had Dr. Lorraine Day on. She worked at one of the biggest hospitals in San Francisco for many years, doing trauma surgery. And I asked her, do you know anything? Are you aware of any biological experimentation going on? And she said, oh yes, and cited several examples, one in San Francisco. I'm telling you, Will, if what you're saying turns out to be true, what you're saying is dangerous for you, I think.
We now have lab tests of a clean sample and a very sick researcher. We'll talk about that later tonight. But
now
we have some numbers and we have some science.
Let me hit you again. It's dangerous for you, Will. Have you thought about that?
Yes, I've given it thought. I mean, I've been doing this work for a while. I've written a book exposing the biological war in the Gulf. I was, frankly, a little concerned researching some of this material and felt very good to publish it, as I feel very good to go public with this information tonight and on many other occasions, as well as my own website. I feel that going public is the very best and safest policy.
It is.
For dealing with this information. I'll also quickly say that so far I have gotten no indication of, shall we say, negative feedback or unhappy people with sprained toes that might have gotten stepped on. So far, the people behind this are so sure of themselves and so arrogant, they apparently don't feel very threatened right now. We'll keep going. And
well, as you said, though, it has, this story has legs, and it's beginning to gain traction. And as it gains traction in the media, and it will elsewhere, I've seen a couple of newspaper reports now on what you're doing, Will. As it gains traction in the mainstream media, the situation may change a little bit. So you watch your rear.
I will watch my rear and my front very carefully, and I'm delighted to hear you talk about mainstream media. That is the breakthrough that many of us researchers are looking for, and I will say that I'm working closely with at least six individuals. I won't name them tonight on air, but they know who they are, and I really appreciate their work, and I'm sure they're listening tonight, as are people with other agendas, and I suspect people who know part or all of what's going on.
Oh, I'm sure you're correct. Now, did you happen to hear the interview that Linda Moulton Howe did with the very articulate gentleman who described the contrails he saw in conjunction with this white or silvery saucer-like thing? That part of the report aside, the contrail, a description he gave, Will, to me, went right down the line with what you've been reporting. The kind of oily, did you hear what he said about the kind of oily appearance within the contrail, like oil on the water, he said?
Yes, and the horizon-to-horizon length of these contrails. You know, I had an experience just 2 weeks ago. I'm out here on the west coast of Canada. I was driving into town one afternoon, and I had heard of some reports of chemtrails, as I call them, being laid over the coast here, and I saw a contrail, what I thought was a contrail, and I said, now let's not be paranoid here, let's take it easy,
right.
And I watched this thing, and by gosh, it didn't dissipate at all, it spread out, it hung in the air, just like the contrails, chemtrails I'd been reporting. I remembered to do something, Art, I remembered some advice someone gave me, and I put on my sunglasses, my polarizing sunglasses,
yes.
And I nearly crashed the car. I'm not exaggerating. When I looked up, I saw, instead of this white cloud, a rainbow-colored prismatic bar of light. It looked like an oil stain in a puddle. It was a chemical signature. And when I removed my sunglasses, I saw a pretty white cloud.
That's why I went back to the oil on the water story that fella told. It hit me right between the eyes. Now, folks, you're going to hear some scientific proof, some samples that have been analyzed. But I tell you, Will, we're treading on dangerous ground here. What is your, before we even get into this, what's your best guess, Will? Do you think that our government is anticipating some kind of, this is the best hope you can have, they're anticipating some kind of terrorist threat, and they're in the middle of some sort of mass secret inoculation for our own good. That's about the best you can hope for, without our permission, mind you, but nevertheless, at least with some sort of positive thought for all of us under these contrails. Is that possible?
It is possible, Art. The people working with me on this story have come forward in the last few days with some compelling information on inhalation vaccine, something that's been studied commercially since the 1970s and whispered about by the military since the 80s, that is a possibility. However, the lab tests we've gotten back so far are of substances that you certainly wouldn't want to ingest, and as far as we can tell, with a very few samples, admittedly, it doesn't quite hold up. But, yeah, I can build a theoretical case for inoculation. I can build a very good case for weather modification. And I can build a case for pathogens deliberately making people very ill, either to test as a biological warfare simulant, as has been going on since 1949 in hundreds of cities across the United States, well documented by the U.S. Congress, and in United Kingdom and Britain, as we learned a couple of weeks ago.
William, hold on. We're at a break point. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 17th, 1999. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 17th, 1999.
William Thomas is my guest. We're talking about contrails. No, not your everyday normal contrails, not by a long shot. And if you listen carefully, as an adult, grown-up person, you can decide for yourself. I've been doing that, and I'm beginning to come to some personal conclusions that I don't particularly like. You may too. William Thomas will be right back.
Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
There's got to be a point where people say, enough is enough. But my perception is that this is moving at a very rapid clip now. It's almost as if they think that they're out of time.
It seems like they've got to hurry up and speed things up or something's going to happen. It's all about money, power, and public control. And until we wake up and wake up all the people around us, it's going to get worse.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 17th, 1999.
All right, once again, here is investigative journalist William Thomas. And William, very quickly, just before we get started again, I want to bring on Chuck from New Jersey. Chuck, are you there?
Yes, I am, Art.
You sent me a fax here a few moments ago. You want to relate the general contents of that to everybody?
Sure. This morning about 9 o'clock, I'd gone outside to feed my chickens, and I noticed up in the sky a contrail had caught my attention. It was about four lines going from southwest to northeast with a checkerboard pattern. And I called my wife out, and she took a look at it, and she thought it was pretty strange, and we kept an eye on it all day. And, Art, I'll tell you, they covered the entire area of my visibility down here today.
And you're where in New Jersey, please, Chuck?
I'm in southern New Jersey, in Gloucester County. I'm about 10 miles south of the Philadelphia International Airport.
Okay.
And they would fly in that same direction, southwest to northeast, and they would get a little past my house, and they would come to an abrupt stop. And then you could see they would come back, and they would do another line. And then they would crisscross that line. And then they would come back, and they would do zigzag patterns all over my house. And it turned into one big, dirty, puffy cloud.
Yeah.
And
you got photographs and you got video?
I have video and photographs. And the strange thing was, you know how you look at a cloud and you can see a hole through the cloud to the blue sky?
Sure.
They would come back and fill that in. Now, I have a mother-in-law. She's 30 miles north of my area, and she was seeing exactly what I was seeing in the time where they disappeared from my view. She would see it in her range, and they would start painting her sky.
William, is this typical?
It is, and it's noteworthy that Chuck talked about the stopping of the chemtrails. I have many reports, particularly over regions bounded by mountains where the aircraft will fly out to the mountain range, turn off the chemtrail, turn back on a reciprocal heading, and turn the chemtrail back on, just as Chuck described out there in New Jersey.
My God, you can't turn a contrail on and off.
No, that's what I was saying to my wife. If there was a plane creating a contrail, you would see a continuous, you know, through the whole entire sky.
Listen, Chuck, we're going to be giving out some contact information for William as the night goes on. Would you get him some copies of this, please?
Sure. I'd like to Federal Express you out the videotape as soon as possible.
All right. Thank you very, very much, Chuck. I appreciate the report.
No problem, Mark.
He said in his facts, the story is incredible. I have contrails. I think this story is going to top all others heard anywhere thus far. So, you know, people are waking up and they're going, holy smokes, or something. And, William, I don't know what you've got us into here, but you're beginning to get me into it. I'm beginning to see it for myself. And I guess we should tell people what we know in terms of what you have analyzed. I don't know what's in these things. I mean, are they just contrails, or do we now have some evidence that they're more than just contrails?
We do have some evidence, and we have a high-ranking American military officer telling us tonight that, folks, these are not contrails. We have people noting all over the United States that commercial aircraft flying at or near the exact same altitude of these unmarked white tanker-type aircraft emit normal contrails that disappear quickly, while the contrails coming from the tankers flying almost alongside do not dissipate but persist for many hours. I have a report just this morning of aircraft, commercial jets near an airport attempting to dive under the chemtrail from a tanker. We have a Major General Barlow from the Office of the Adjutant General, Camp Murray, Tacoma, Washington, in a signed letter 2 weeks ago saying, quote, our KC-135 jet aircraft operate at altitudes below 33,000 feet, which is typically the altitude where jet contrails form, end of quote. In other words, our tankers do not emit contrails ever. They don't fly that high. They can't. They don't fly that high because they refuel planes lower down. So this Major General is saying, hey, folks, the tankers do not emit contrails, period.
Let's talk about what contrails are. Regular old, when we were small, jet cutting across the blue sky contrail. I see it every day. I've seen it every day of my life when I've been outside, and that is, you see a jet emitting this white cloud-like, I don't know, what a normal contrail is made up of what? What creates a contrail normally, William?
Ice crystals, pure and simple ice crystals. As Major General Barlow noted, they form above 33,000 feet, above 34,000 or 35,000 feet where it's very cold. The water vapor from aircraft engines, piston or jet, particularly jet engines, disturb these ice crystals, add vapor, and you get a billowing trail from the exhaust of the jet, a white pencil-thin trail, actually. Also, the turbulence off the wingtips can disturb these ice crystals and create contrails from the wingtips. It's very, very interesting that in the many photographs I have and videotapes, we are seeing supposed contrails coming from the tails of these tankers with wing-mounted engines.
But not the wings?
We are seeing contrails from the wings that are outboard of the engines and inboard of the wing tip. In other words, between the engine and the wing tip, we are seeing contrails. Art, the only thing there on a tanker are refueling probes on each wing for jet aircraft. Also, of course, the tail is where the main refueling probe is located on both type tanker aircraft, and we have people with amateur telescopes and binoculars writing in to say they can see that probe hanging down at a 60-degree angle, pouring out some kind of substance.
Oh, my God.
These are not contrails. And finally, we have many reports, many videos and photographs, very disturbing art at a low level. I'm talking below 9,000 feet. Contrails physically cannot form ever at that altitude.
These are reliable reports.
Absolutely. I have reports from pilots, military people, and photographs and videotapes that, frankly, cannot lie. Not the preponderance of evidence I have spread out as I look around me over two big work tables. These planes are low, some of them, below 10,000 feet, unmistakably. And again, there is no possibility that the white clouds pouring off these aircraft are contrails. No possibility at all. And we have a major general agreeing with this evaluation.
Do you will have a best guess about what's going on? Do you have a best guess? What is your best guess?
I'm afraid I have two best guesses, and they're only guesses, although we'll get into some lab tests in a minute. One, biological agents, known pathogens, organisms that come from research laboratories are being spread by these chemtrails. That is fact, and we'll get into some proof in a moment.
Okay.
Number two, we have indications from those same samples that there are components that are involved with weather modification, and something you're well aware of with your frequent guest, Dr. Nick Bagage, something called HARP up in Alaska. They may be separate. They may be two for the price of one, but I can demonstrate tonight that both are taking place. The whys and the wherefores, well, I'll leave that to your listeners. But I would remind the people who have been telling me that these are just contrails,
mm-hmm.
that if they haven't heard enough yet tonight to disabuse them of that notion, I would hope that they could answer and tell me how in the world a jelly-like goop continues to fall from supposed vapor trails of aircraft.
Sometimes described as jelly-like, sometimes described as spiderweb-like, huh?
Yes, and I have you asked for some best guesses. I'll give you one. It's my hunch that the spray nozzles on these aircraft sometimes malfunction or are incorrectly set. I was talking to a biowarfare specialist, and he said if those orifices are misadjusted, something like a Pseudomonas bacteria would come out, wait for this, as an angel hair type substance. I would further suggest that if they're way off the mark, you can get this jelly-like goop because the nozzles are out of alignment.
Boy, it's like a light bulb went off. Ding, ding. Exactly right, of course. In other words, what normally should be roughly in what we would call an aerosol form,
exactly,
if the nozzle malfunctioned, would come out as a more solid substance of some kind, even in the worst case, as a kind of a goop.
Yeah, the goop is an oops. The goop is a big oops, and we have goop over the White Mountains of Arizona, very remote, in 1997, Hot Springs, Arkansas, Aptos, California, North Seattle, Washington, in recent years. London, England, December 22 to 23, this gentleman writes he was driving his car, as this gel just globbed onto my car windshield, seemingly out of nowhere. He couldn't wipe it off with a towel and you know, his screen washer. He had to go to a pressure washer to get this stuff off his car, as have police officers trying to get it off their police cruisers in the United States. Well, just after I received that report and a report of the characteristic X over London, I learned from the BBC that 8,100 people, mostly elderly people, had died in the last week of December and the first 2 weeks of January 1999, not from the flu, but from flu-like symptoms, upper respiratory ailments.
William, I'm telling you, this is dangerous stuff. This is really dangerous stuff. I mean, you've got to know that if it's what you're saying it is, well, somebody wouldn't think 2 seconds about putting you away.
But I can't prove it. And until I can actually hold that smoking cannon in my hand, whoever is doing what I think, underline think they are doing, is confident that they can get away with it. You know, Art, I have the feeling as we talk on these interviews we've been doing that there are people out there who know what's going on and they're going, yeah, that's closer. You're getting closer. Yeah. No, you're getting further away. And as long as we're playing this game, you know, we can go on for quite a while. But I feel the investigation is starting to pin some certain things down. If we go on to Oakville, Washington, for the big goop that made Unexplained Mysteries television.
I interviewed the lady.
There you go.
On the air. And you know, they had that stuff, that goop, tested. And what they found, along with other things, was human DNA.
Correct. That is correct. The other things were very interesting as well. They found Pseudomonas fluorescens and an enterobacteria. Admittedly, the microbiologist said it could have come from the environment, though these samples came from a porch and not the soil. Where these critters could have lived. But the Pseudomonas fluorescens is a nasty little
what is
bacteria that can and is often genetically modified, sometimes sprayed on crops to get rid of bad things, or what we think are bad things. It can lead to blood infections in human beings. It's not good stuff at all. They found this at Oakville, and, of course, we're talking six exposures of goop falling out of the sky in 94, and again in June 97, this stuff fell again on Oakville, not a happy place with these organisms falling on them. We go to Fairfield, California in Thanksgiving of 97, and a college microbiology lab found Pseudomonas aeruginosa, another Pseudomonas bacteria.
All right. Listen to this, Will. I've had millions of these, but this one. Dear Art, thank you for having William Thomas on again this evening. Since he's been on, I've taken close to 48 photos myself, plus I've had an environmental specialist examine the inside of my home. I gave a copy of the tape on chemtrails to this environmental specialist. And what he said scared the hell out of me. He said that one of the chemicals William Thomas mentioned is a known chemical that causes liver disease. This specialist does environmental testing, assessments, and consulting. He also looks into sick building syndrome, odor identification and elimination. And if that wasn't enough, he tests for air and water contamination and elimination. This guy is a member of Environmental Engineers and Managers Institute and the Arizona Indoor Air Quality Control. Now, that's kind of scary. Liver disease?
Yes, indeed. As I say, we'll get into some lab tests of some organisms that directly attack the liver and other organisms, but sticking with this Pseudomonas aeruginosa, which keeps cropping up in my investigation, this will ring a bell with your listeners tonight. This Pseudomonas can lead to ear infection, muscle and joint pain, upper respiratory problems, gastrointestinal symptoms, which we're starting to see now, eye infections, which we've seen, meningitis. This opportunistic pathogen can...
Opportunistic.
Its primary focus of infection is the lungs, and it results in a very thick mucus. It is also, wait for this, associated with pneumonia, staph, and bronchitis. We've just gone down the entire list of symptomology reported by, I would hazard a guess, tens of thousands of Americans in these emergency rooms and hospital wards.
Well, you know, William, I've seen flu come and go year after year, but I've never seen these numbers, these phone numbers that are cropping up all across the United States, special numbers for you to call, like 1-888-I-GOT-FLU or whatever the hell it was, where, as you pointed out, only under certain circumstances, if you have certain very specific symptoms, will they treat you and welcome you with open arms into this program. And it sure smells to me, too, like a great survey they're running out there to see the effects of what they have done. That's a lot of theys.
It could be, because if they're tracking a normal outbreak of a flu or flu-like symptoms, I don't think they would restrict it in the way that they're doing. And also, I'm sure that the Center for Disease Control would announce that we are in an epidemic. In fact, they're saying that deaths from pneumonia and flu-like symptoms were at epidemic levels for 3 consecutive weeks in late January and February, and they said they hadn't seen a downturn then, but other hospitals and the CDC themselves say if we're talking simply about flu, we've had a pretty easy season this year. Certainly no epidemic. In fact, it seems to be lower than normal.
William, hold it right there. We'll be right back, folks. From the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 17th, 1999. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 17, 1999.
Well, you'll never look at the sky the same way again, will you? You'll never see a contrail in quite the same light again, will you? Remember Jaws? And then the follow-ups to it, just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water again? Well, now you can't even walk outside without thinking about it once or twice. You can't look at a contrail cutting across the sky innocently the way they used to do anymore. You can't look at it in the same way. You've got to look a little harder. Try to decide what it is you're really seeing.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player, and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think. As a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and 2 weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
There's got to be a point where people say, enough is enough. But my perception is that this is moving at a very rapid clip now. It's almost as if they think that they're out of time.
It seems like they've got to hurry up and speed things up or something's going to happen. It's all about money, power, and public control. And until we wake up and wake up all the people around us, it's going to get worse.
Now, let's go back to the night of March 17th, 1999, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Once again, here comes William Thomas. Now, William has a book, and I want to take a second out. Hopefully you've got your paper and your pencil ready. And you can write, the name of your book is what, William?
Bringing the War Home. And what a prophetic title that turned out to be.
Bringing the War Home. It's available on Amazon.com, correct?
That's right.
All right. We have a link to that, so if somebody's got a computer, they can go zooming up to my website, www.artbell.com. Just go down to William Thomas's name. It'll take you to his book.
And it's $22.95 with shipping included.
Okay.
And I'm afraid people are going to really need the information in this book after all.
Bringing the War Home, $22.95. Well, I'm sure a lot of books are about to go out the door. And we'll mention that again if you missed it, if you're in your car or something. Just hang loose. We'll get you the information again on the book. Now, contrails. Contrails, chemtrails. You call them chemtrails for obvious reasons. You don't think they're contrails at all. Now, there is going to be, William, I think a lot of misidentification. There's going to be a little bit of panic out there, and people are going to see a normal contrail, and they're going to go, oh, my God, I'm being poisoned, and they're going to run inside or something. The question is, how is a mother to know what's a real contrail and what's a chemtrail? How's one to know when you should be out of whatever's falling around you, or whether it even does any damn good to be out of what's falling upon you? What do we know about that?
We do know precisely what you're suggesting, that people are seeing normal contrails from normal aircraft operations, and they're freaking out. And I certainly don't want to add to the millennial hysteria we all feel and have people be afraid of these things unnecessarily. On the other hand, we had better be alert, especially for our children and our grandparents. And I would suggest that people simply observe these contrails over the space of just a few minutes. Check them out. Go on about your business. Have another look. Have they dispersed? Have they disappeared? If not, look closer. if the observed signature from an aircraft, this white billowy trail off the wings or especially off the tail section, if that does not dissipate but actually spreads out and seems to linger, and especially if it appears to go from horizon to horizon, I would suggest that you take cover and get your children under cover probably for the rest of the afternoon, the rest of the day, because these things do tend to form an overcast that lingers.
Okay, can I ask a question here? You said it covers everything. In other words, it becomes totally, seemingly overcast with this crap. Now, would that be a fairly localized situation, or would somebody 50 miles or 100 miles away in New Jersey or New York or wherever, would they also perceive the entire sky to be overcast? There's a reason I'm asking that, because you might have that perception from something laid at a relatively low level, and it would be more local than it would regional.
It would be local. In fact, you could drive in and out of it.
Exactly.
You could drive into it thinking that it was a overcast condition, or in some cases a low ground fog, but it would not extend, I would say, more than 35, 40 miles from the area. Of course, you're also looking for the characteristic X, which I now am just about certain is used as a marker for satellites to check out the exact position and time of these sprays for weather modification, testing, and verification. So if you see the characteristic X, you know you do not have a normal flight operation. Commercial aircraft would be breaking quite a few regulations if they crossed each other's paths.
You know, I was going to ask you why an X, and you just answered that elegantly. You said because satellites are observing that it's marking the location with a giant damn X. That's it, right?
That's it. There are lots of clouds up there. So what's the cloud and what's the experiment? Well, the X marks the spot.
Oh, man. I don't know what to say about all this. Let's talk a little bit about what you have found out in the lab. To those who are out there skeptically listening, I don't blame them. Nobody is going to want to accept what we're hearing tonight. Nobody wants to accept the possibility that our own government is doing something wrong to us. Now, what lab results can you tell us about? What have you done? What have you analyzed? Where'd you get it?
I have been in contact with Joe Burton, and Joe has been front and center in this chemtrail research for the past year. In fact, he's been looking at this for nearly 2 years now. He has been compiling quite a bit of excellent information using an air sampling machine and a video camera, literally side by side. We expect some air sample tests early next week, but Joe has given me permission tonight to go public with the actual lab results of his own full-body scan, which was done just last week. Joe's been sick for a year now. As an investigator of these chemtrails, he's been constantly exposed and constantly sick. He first got sick in April of 98, he said, while investigating a secret base, which he's told me quite a lot about. He was in a wooded area in Tennessee, and he noticed he became easily fatigued. And then last summer, he had heavy blood in his urine and even gushing from his mouth on one occasion, so he knew he was in some kind of trouble. 3 weeks ago, he told me a toxic fog came down for a second time, so heavy in his area in Tennessee that a road was actually closed. Residents called the police saying a plane was crashing. The plane was very low flying but didn't crash. Instead, Joe got large open sores in his mouth the next morning, and his wife had a sore throat and cough for 3 days before spitting out a gel-like substance about the size of a quarter, and then her sore throat immediately left. Their young dog has been suffering from respiratory problems since this spray. And so he said, I'd better get to a doctor, particularly after seeing particles swirling in the fog, he said, just as he told his wife to get back inside the house. He said the particles were swirling as if electrically charged. We'll get back to that in a moment. But right now, he said his notable symptoms have been severe physical fatigue. His feet have been extremely tender on the bottoms, on the soles of his feet, making walking very difficult in the morning. He's got severe joint aches, tenderness to the touch of various parts of his body, respiratory problems, that is, it's hard to breathe, get enough oxygen after very easy exertion. He's losing weight. He's got memory loss and eyesight problems sometimes. These are sent red flags all over, because these are the symptoms that I talk about in Bringing the War Home when I discuss the biological warfare that occurred in the Gulf and the truth behind Gulf War illness. These symptoms, any Gulf War veteran listening tonight
would know.
Who's sick will know immediately what Joe is talking about. This is Gulf War illness, plain and simple. Okay.
Well, so he's been, more or less, because he's been investigating, because he's been photographing, because he's been analyzing, he has intentionally exposed himself at every opportunity, really, to these chemtrails to gather evidence, and now look what's happened.
Exactly, and my friend William Wallace in Washington State is in the same position, except Mr. Wallace has gone to the media three times, and within days of each occasion, he has been attacked, there's no other word, by twin-engine aircraft, unmarked, spraying just his property from property line to property line. And now he has some of the symptoms that Joe Burton's talking about. But Joe did something. He went to a doctor after going to two regular MDs. Who one said, oh, there's nothing wrong with you, of course. The other said, oh, you have chronic fatigue, but I don't have a clue where you got it from. He finally found a doctor to do a full body scan called a body scan 2010 last week. And now, as I said, he's allowed me to go public with the findings. Joe is in pretty rough shape tonight. I know he's listening. The doctor told him that some organisms have been entering his lungs and attacking his liver. You mentioned that earlier, Art.
Yes, I did.
His gallbladder, and is about to begin affecting the only kidney he was born with. He said, the doctor said, if you cannot purge two of these chemicals, you will be dead within a year. Those two chemicals, the doctor didn't even know what they were. I can't pretend to pronounce something that goes the full width of my computer screen. But the first is a poison attached to an amino acid. I got this from a biowarfare specialist.
An amino acid is, they call that the building blocks of life. Amino acids.
Exactly. But this one is an altered molecule. And this one will replace the good amino acid, the building blocks of life, in enzyme production. And then, according to this expert, you will not be able to produce good enzymes. He also said, once in the body, this is very, very difficult to remove. Again, a very long name. When I finally publish this report, you'll have the full chemical name. The second one is an amino acid poison used, I'm told, quite a bit as a chemical warfare agent.
Oh.
You do not get this in normal background of your environment, not even in a polluted environment. Mr. Burton was also found to have trifluoronitrosomethane. There we go, trifluoronitrosomethane.
What is that?
Well, we couldn't find that out. It's another one of these very esoteric things, chemicals. However, I had a researcher come through just before the show tonight, and she kindly had researched through the EPA, and I went through the list, and guess what I found? That trifluoromethyl is an active ingredient, a principal ingredient, in 28 primary pesticides licensed by the EPA. This is not nice stuff.
Pesticide.
Pesticide.
pests? You know,
I begin to wonder who the pests are.
I have all these stories in front of me. This one is entitled "Lines in the Sky Identified as Pesticide." You familiar with this story?
If it's out of Alberta, Canada, I am. But
it
otherwise,
says, no. This says the lab director of Aquatech in. You are familiar in Marion, Ohio,
mm-hmm.
using samples taken from JP8 contaminated fields of Maryland and Pennsylvania, reported that ethylene dibromide has been the contaminant in the fuel and water samples submitted by farmers, pilots, and tanker drivers. EDB is one of the most tightly controlled EPA substances and was banned in 1983 due to its carcinogenity, as a carcinogen, in other words. EDB is a pesticide that apparently is being placed in jet fuel and dispersed on a daily, almost nonstop basis in our skies. The lines filling our skies are not contrails. The lines are dispersed and may linger on for hours, slowly filtering down to unsuspecting pests. I guess were the pests. Have you heard about this?
Oh, absolutely. The ethylene dibromide received 7 pages on the EPA's hazardous materials list. It is a known carcinogen. It must be handled with extreme caution. I'm told that fuel handlers have gotten so sick and even died from this that they've complained to the airline industry and to the military. It attacks male and female reproductive systems, but it primarily affects the upper respiratory tract, leading to severe coughing, a dry cough, shortness of breath.
Yep.
Here we go again, bronchitis.
Yep. It also says water samples are contaminated with EDB and crops are dying. You know about that?
I don't know about the crops are dying. I do know that Aquatech came under so much pressure from people once they heard about this test that they basically stopped answering queries. But I finally got my hands on the actual lab test, the actual test done by Aquatech and signed off by them.
Oh.
I found not only ethylene dibromide, but 43 other toxic substances, toluene, benzene, other petrochemicals in that lab test. I will tell you that Aquatech found them at very low levels, and I will quickly add that the two people who submitted the test to Aquatech, including a microbiologist, say that those test results have been altered from the original. I can only report what they're saying, but I can confirm that ethylene dibromide and some 43 other toxins were found in this particular, in these samples. Actually, there was more than one. This JP8 jet fuel containing ethylene dibromide replaced JP4 in 1991. And
brother, it was
banned in 83.
I'm telling you, brother, we're treading on dangerous territory here. Every sense inside of me tells me it's dangerous territory. William Thomas is my guest. We're talking about chemtrails as opposed to contrails. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 17th, 1999.
Together in eternity, Romeo and Juliet.
Radio Networks presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired March 17, 1999.
Well, what do you think? Is this the America that we all came to, that we know, that we love, that is supposed to love us and freedom? Is it that America?
Far, we've been traveling far. Without a home, not without a star. Only want to be free. We huddle close, hang on to a dream.
I've got a story here.
On the boats and on the planes, coming to America.
It's from the California.
We're looking back again.
It's called Clouds of Mystery.
Coming to America. Don't it seem so far away? We're traveling light today. In the eye of the storm. In the eye of the storm.
Good morning. William Thomas will be right back.
Now, let's go back to the night of March 17th, 1999. On Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Okay, once again, I have in front of me a story, a faxed story called Clouds of Mystery, which says, on the web and on the radio, a researcher is alleging that those pretty white streaks in our sky could be hazardous to our health. It's a story in a publication called The Californian, by Andy Keehy, it looks like, and it quotes a Dr. Gregory, it looks like Hanford, I'm not sure, Dr. Gregory Hanford, and it says, the doctor says, quote, I suspect something strange, I do, I watch on weekends. I've seen them make a Roman numeral once and a bullseye. It's really strange, I just want some answers, end quote. Do you know that doctor?
I do. That's Dr. Greg Hanford. Greg Hanford from Bakersfield, California.
How did this story get in the Californian? Obviously, they must have come to you and done an interview.
If that is the paper out of Bakersfield, we did two very extensive interviews.
Yeah, and they did two very extensive stories, too. So in other words, you're beginning to hit some pretty mainstream media here now, aren't you?
Yes, I have. Tentative feelers, shall we say, from the Boston Globe and the New York Times biowarfare correspondent. We're starting.
All right. I also, and I can't know whether this is real, but I have a fax in front of me that seems to be from the television show Extra. You know anything about that?
No, I don't.
Maybe it isn't from Extra. Maybe it's made up. I don't know. But it says, germ warfare, U.S. soil. It sounds like something out of the X-Files, germ warfare in America's cities, but in a top-secret experiment lasting two decades, the U.S. government sprayed citizens with harmful bacteria. It's hard to believe, but it really happened. Extra unlocked a shocking story of government betrayal in a special report. And it goes on and on and on about American citizens being sprayed without their knowledge. It quotes professors. It says, Extra has obtained the confidential congressional report that confirms Cole's statements as true. I don't know whether somebody, it talks about a New York subway experiment, the San Francisco experiment. Apparently, it looks real to me. I have no way of knowing, but it looks to me like Extra is on to this story. So I wouldn't be surprised but that you would hear from them.
Art, that information is absolutely accurate. We have two Senate investigations, one in May 6, 1994, another one back in 1977, talking about open-air testing with simulated biological and chemical warfare agents. During just a few years in the 60s, Art, these investigations found that 239 U.S. cities were sprayed with zinc-cadmium sulfide, a very hazardous material. We're talking Hawaii, Alaska, San Francisco, St. Louis, Detroit, Minneapolis, New York City, Washington, D.C., Key West, Toledo, Minneapolis, Springfield, Illinois, among others. The San Francisco experiment did occur, took place in 1950 with a bacterial agent resulting in, wait for this one, pneumonia-like illnesses. Oh my God. There were fatalities. 1966 was the year the New York City subway system was hit. In 1953, this zinc cadmium sulfide was sprayed, I'm reading from the government's own documents here, over a Minneapolis elementary school. There were 600 children inside that school, Art.
Oh, my God. Let me read you how they conclude here. Now, this reads like an extra story. I think somebody at the TV show slipped this to me, wanted me to have it. But I can't verify that it's really true. But listen, could such testing, you know, they deny, of course, it's going on. Could such testing still be happening today? It says, Extra went to the Army headquarters for medical research, Fort Detrick, Maryland, for answers. Spokesman Chuck Dacey assured Extra that we are, quote, no longer conducting tests on the general population. All the lessons that were learned from these large simulation tests is still in the database, and that information has not changed. Now, if they're admitting, well, yes, you know, we did it. By the way, it also says in the story, and because of a law passed in 1969, it is legal, even today, for the government to perform open-air testing without public knowledge. Now, this reads just like a story put together by a journalistic organization, in this case, Extra. I can't know it's true, but it reads like the truth, William, so they may be on to this.
Yeah, they're onto quite a few things. It is quite legal to do this. If you go to U.S. Code Title 50, check out Section 1520, and you'll find that this law, which was amended on November 18, 97, says, guess what? The Secretary of Defense may conduct any test or experiment involving the use of a chemical agent or biological agent on a civilian population if it is related to research activity.
If it's related to research activity, what the hell does that mean? Research on what? How to kill people efficiently?
Well, actually, the military is continuing to test these biological warfare simulants because they are desperate to find a detector that works. No one has one yet. There are some breakthroughs and some leads, but I went back to Bethesda, Maryland on the web and conducted my own investigation and found a high-ranking officer there admitting that their computer simulations just didn't cut it. They needed to test these things on real live folks. Have an open-air field test to really test these biowarfare agents. And, of course, he said these would be volunteers wearing protective clothing. Of course they would, except we have this Code Title 50, Section 1520, saying that you and your family may, in fact, be guinea pigs for biological warfare testing. But if we go down further, oh, there's a slight catch. It says, this can be done only if informed consent to the testing was obtained from each human subject in advance of the testing on that subject. So maybe they're using telepathy.
What about your friend who is so very sick right now? You said throwing up blood and all the rest of it. They got his signature, right?
Joe is not throwing up blood at the moment, but he does have these things in him. He also has... they didn't find ethylene dibromide in that scan last week. They found turpentine instead, or what they thought was turpentine. That's used as a carrier or a matrix for these nasty proteins. Joe has some more problems, though, because they found some viruses. They found a hepatitis A, which might relate to his liver problems.
Yeah.
Epstein-Barr, flu 83. I don't know if that's an identifier or a year. And then, Art, they found something called V2 gripe, a Swiss virus And my researcher came back and said, well, the article on this was in French, came out of the University of Geneva. Now, we all know what's in Geneva. That's the headquarters for the World Health Organization, yep. Those folks implicated in the spread of HIV and a few other things. And then, actually, just a few minutes ago while we were on break, something clicked for me here, and I'll run this by you. March 10th, 1999, Associated Press. The UN World Health Organization has sent 880 pounds of medical supplies to a remote mountainous region of northern Afghanistan where an influenza-like disease has claimed close to 200 lives.
I read that last week. I didn't report it, but I read it last week, William. I know that story is true.
Well, how about this? January 29th, Bucharest, Reuters, a wave of flu-like symptoms hitting hundreds of thousands of people from the Czech Republic to Russia's Pacific coast. The hospitals are overstretched. Schools are closed. The Ukraine alone has 100,000 cases, more than twice last year's figure. This is a huge epidemic in the former Soviet Union of flu-like symptoms.
My God, your friend is like a walking arsenal, isn't he, with everything he's got in him?
Yeah, Joe has a problem, and I want to state very clearly for our listeners, I'm not suggesting that if you come under these chemtrails, you're going to have the same problems as a person who has been out there investigating these things for 2 years. This is one case only. What I find significant, however, is that the findings in Joe's body and his organs are biowarfare-type chemicals that come out of research labs, not from the natural environment.
Was Joe in the Gulf War?
No, he was not, but he certainly has the symptoms of Gulf War syndrome, and I would suggest, I know he's listening, that he be tested for mycoplasma because he's got all the symptoms.
Mycoplasma incognitus?
Yes, and others, but the incognitus and mycoplasma fermentans incognitus, absolutely.
Is Joe the kind of guy who wants to speak out or not?
He's very, very courageous, and he said he will continue to research this and speak out on the net and through emails and send me his findings. He said he's not going to quit. In fact, Art, I called him just before we went on air and asked him how he's doing. He said he was sick, he was tired, but he was hanging in there, and I said, Joe, what do you think is going on here? And his reply was, he said, we got two things going on. We've got weather modification and fallout from the chemicals used in weather modification, and we have what appears to be deliberate use of pathogens in this spray.
All right, well, I'm telling you, walking down the weather modification trail is a dangerous one, but let's touch on that. It's something we haven't really talked about. You said it now two or three times. What evidence or even leading indicators do we have, William, to indicate to us that this is somehow mixed up in weather modification? How do you put that together?
I put it together courtesy of the United States Air Force. The report Owning the Weather talks about their research in controlling the weather, adding small amounts of energy, they said, at just the right time and space.
You know, the Air Force actually said, we will own the weather, didn't they?
Absolutely.
Now, you know, my webmaster was chuckling when that was first said, Keith. And then during the show last time, he went, and I'll be damned if he didn't find the links on Air Force sites where that quote is absolutely there. We will own the weather.
We will own the weather. We will add bits of parts of the energy to the atmosphere to heat it up. We will spray chemicals, perhaps polymers, behind tanker-type aircraft, and warm it up, and we will change the weather. We will induce cloud cover to shield our activities on the ground. I'm not sure what they refer to there, Art, because, as you know, satellites now in orbit over the Earth use radar and infrared and go right through cloud cover. But nevertheless, they talked about forming dense overcast. But what they didn't talk about very much at all was HARP, this transmitter up in
Alaska.
And what you will not find on the website is Technical Memorandum 195, issued on October 1991, a document the Air Force says does not exist, except, sorry, I have a copy of it in my hands tonight. And on page 185 of this document, I see that there is a call by the Ionospheric Effects Division of the U.S. Air Force Phillips Laboratory for HARP to reach a peak power output of 100 billion watts.
That's right. That's right. And not only is it 100 billion watts, William, but most radio transmissions, we were talking about this last night, begin from an antenna like I've got in my backyard, 100-foot tower. They begin as very narrow beam widths, and they get broader and broader and broader as they go out. That's the way it works. Unless you intentionally have a large array on the ground, which is designed to start out as a broad signal and get more, again, more and more narrow until when you get to the point you're focusing on, you have literally a beam width of incredible intensity right up in the ionosphere. And, of course, that's what HARP is doing.
That's right. And the radio stations you mentioned are probably broadcasting anywhere from, correct me, please, 20, 50,000 watts, maybe a couple hundred thousand watts maximum.
Yes, but it disperses widely.
Yes.
It's intended to. That's the whole idea. You're broadcasting. You want lots of people to hear it. HARP is the exact opposite. It starts out as a wide signal and ends up as a pinpoint of incredible intensity in our ionosphere.
That's exactly right. Not only that, of course, but the ionosphere is electrically charged. It is very unstable, that is, very active. And what they're finding now when they use ionospheric heaters such as HARP, there's a second one now in Alaska, there's one down in Puerto Rico, one in Germany, they find that they get an amplification of effect. They get a runaway effect where the ionosphere starts to feed back into this beam and amplify its signal so it exceeds its effective power on the ground. Heavy duty, heavy duty.
Are you familiar, just as a sort of a side note, with the research going on right now with regard to NEXRAD radar images that appear to show energy? NEXRAD radar is a new weather radar, and it seems to be showing almost conclusively, William, that in precipitation like rain or snow or something else, we're seeing these energy waves picked up by this NEXRAD radar. It apparently is a pretty touchy subject for some people, but it too may or may not be tied to weather control, but there's some sort of Tesla type energy being used or abused. I'm not exactly sure, but it seems to be showing up in this NEXRAD radar, and if you've not seen the images, you need to take a look.
I will definitely take a look. I have heard of this phenomena, and of course we're interested in what happened at Turret Peak a little while back.
Yeah, you okay, then you know about it.
Yeah.
You know about it.
I also know about patent 4253190, which shows a mirror made of polyester resin held aloft by pressure. It says exerted by electromagnetic radiation, such as, HARP is RF radiation.
Yep.
Maybe they're spraying a polymer or polyester from these aircraft and focusing this beam on it. I talked to an expert, and he says, he said the patents he's looked at talk about an altitude in the range of 10, higher than 10 kilometers, so he's not sure that HARP could be use this at the lower altitudes that these jets are flying. Nevertheless, I talked to Bernard Eastland. Of course, he's the original patent holder, the inventor of HARP, and he tells me that, first of all, he invented this ionospheric heater as a weather modification device, among other things, but he was certainly talking about...
Well, they sure as hell don't admit that. They don't admit that, not when you talk to the people from HARP. Oh, no, it's for... I'm checking out radio propagation. It's for mapping underground tunnels and bunkers, but weather modification? Hell no. They never admit to that. You're telling me the guy who got the patent for HARP admits to it?
Oh, yeah. He told me. I reported in my article on HARP on my website. He said, oh, I looked at using this intense beam, which can be angled, to do some experiments, he said, in terms of guiding the jet stream, moving it from one spot to another, of course, which makes our weather go totally haywire. Some of us listeners, many of them tonight, will pick up on that. Our weather has gone completely bonkers.
No kidding.
This winter, often, Art, within a day or two of heavy spray.
All right. William, hold it right there. William Thomas is my guest. We are going to go to the phone shortly. I know this is a lot to absorb. It's a lot to think about. And it's a sad conclusion that you're forced to come to as you listen. If you want to get a copy of this program, you can do so by calling 1-800-917-4278. 1-800-917-4278. Get a pencil and paper. I'll tell you how to get William's book again in a moment.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 17th, 1999. Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 17, 1999.
William Thomas is here. He's an independent investigator, and he's way out on a limb. I mean, this guy's way out on a limb. Not with the information. I think with the danger of the information. Chemtrails. That's what we're talking about. Those innocent little white puffy things that may not be so innocent at all. There's more coming up with your phone calls in a moment.
Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
There's got to be a point where people say enough is enough. But my perception is that this is moving at a very rapid clip now. It's almost as if they think that they're out of time.
It seems like they've got to hurry up and speed things up or something's going to happen. It's all about money, power, and public control. And until we wake up and wake up all the people around us, it's going to get worse.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 17th, 1999.
Once again, William Thomas's book is Bringing the War Home. Home, you know, here. It's $22.95. If there's anything that we've missed that you really have to get out, let's get it out now because I've got a lot of people who want to talk to you.
Okay, my website, we might repeat that one more time.
Sure.
islandnet.com/tilde, the little wavy mark, W-I-L-C-H-T-H-E. www.islandnet.co. So it's www.islandnet.com/WILCO.
All right. And your email address, if anybody in the media would like to get a hold of you, or there are any really very, very important stories that need to get to you, you want to give it out?
Thank you. Wilco, W-I-L-C-O, at islandnet, one word, islandnet.com. Wilco at islandnet.com.
All right. That's a way to get email to William, particularly if you're in the media and you want to begin your own investigation. That's Wilco, W-I-L-C-O, at islandnet, one word, islandnet.com. Easy enough. Here they come. First time caller line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hi.
Hey, Art. Hello, Mr. Thomas.
You're going to have to yell at us, sir. I can barely hear you.
Okay, my name is Rick, and I'm calling from Middle Tennessee.
Okay.
First of all, I want to say that the thoroughness of your information is unbelievable, and I can't wait to read your book.
Thank you.
I have two short questions, and I'll just ask them together really quick. The first one is, could you elaborate on where possibly in Tennessee, you said earlier in the show that somewhere in Tennessee there might be a launching point for operations involving chemtrails? And the other question is, what is the trend with all these sprayings? Are they picking up in this year over last year?
Uh-huh.
What's the overall picture with that?
All right, those are both really good questions. He's in Tennessee, so he's concerned about where this base might be.
Excellent. Yeah, sorry for the misunderstanding. The base Joe was talking about, and other people are talking about similar bases, was in a wooded area. He simply observed helicopters flying in, C-130s making parachute drops at night of supplies. This had nothing to do with the contrails per se.
All right.
Contrail aircraft were not coming out of this base.
Oh, okay. I'm glad you straightened that out. Then the other question, also a very good one, what does the trend seem to be? Is it a sharp upward curve or down, or has been going on, do you think, for years? Or is this something relatively recent with a big upswing?
I have reports going back to 1992, Rick. Many more reports starting around 1997. But I can tell you that a real upsurge, a spike, has occurred since December of last year, January, February of this year. The trend seems to be up sharply at that time and continuing at very high levels over many American cities. I can name a few off the top of my head.
Dallas.
Dallas, Phoenix, Bakersfield again, Kansas City. Asheville, North Carolina keeps coming up in recent days again and again.
Great. That's where my mom is.
Okay.
My mom's in Asheville.
All over the United States, as well as more remote rural communities. I'm thinking of Salisaw, Oklahoma, a big one for low-level spraying, many sick people, outbreak of lupus, which I suspect is really Mycoplasma fermentans, exhibiting the same symptoms as lupus. Salisaw also important because we have a goo sample that was examined by Dr. Greg Hanford and some folks out in California.
Mm-hmm. When are we going to have the results of some of these samples taken?
Well, we have some results, as a matter of fact.
Of actual samples taken. Now, you talked to us about Joe and Joe's chemical-ridden body.
Yes.
But with regard to actual samples, you have results.
Yes, we do. Well, of course, we have the Oakville, California, Oakville, Washington, I'm sorry, those samples with the Pseudomonas fluorescens, the other bacteria, may have been background contamination, inconclusive. We have the angel hair fallout collected from Salisaw, Oklahoma in October 97. I talked to Dr. Hanford. He was with four other guys looking at it, he said, at a community college lab near Bakersfield,
right.
And they found an unusually big bacteria, an enterobacteria that they thought looked modified, and they managed to pin the family down to E. coli, Salmonella, anthrax, and Shigella came out of that family, but they couldn't, they just simply couldn't identify the species of that bacillus.
So we may be looking at designer stuff here.
We are definitely looking at things that have come out of research laboratories, as well as bacteria that could be present in the soil. I find it interesting, if I can use that word, suggestive perhaps a better word, that the recent outbreaks of flesh-eating staph you're aware of are in Delaware, Michigan, Rockford, Illinois in the last few weeks. This staph A belongs to the same family as Pseudomonas. We keep seeing that Pseudomonas strep and anthrax. So we have a very active family of pathogens cropping up in the mainstream news. I noticed that the Pseudomonas aeruginosa is manufactured by my old friends, the American Type Tissue Culture Corporation of Maryland. These are the folks who supplied at least 72 shipments of germ warfare culture to a person named Saddam Hussein. You can find the invoice numbers and the shipping dates in my book, Bringing the War Home. I'll quickly add this was done legally, but I keep running into the ATTCC in my investigations. Finally, we do have a sample that I've been personally active in promoting. I just sent a check off to pay for the lab work. This is important, Art, because it's the best uncontaminated sample I have seen in my research, taken from an aluminum-sided building. There's no possibility of soil contamination here.
Mm-hmm.
It was taken by a person very skilled, had expertise in health, a journalist who documented it with still photographs, which I have, videotape, which I have, very well documented sample of the goo that fell on a building in a city in the United States within the last year, fell out of an airplane, splattered this building with a brown-colored goo. We got this into a research lab last week, and the biologists who looked at this asked, where did we get this biohazard material?
What? Biohazard?
Biohazard. The lab was very concerned because they said, now normally samples take several days to grow. You put it in a culture and see if you can get it to grow.
Right.
These samples, they said, flowered not even 48 hours in the Petri dish. They said, they told us, these things are loaded with viable living bacteria. We have never seen anything grow as quickly as this. It was all over the plate. Where did you get these samples?
All right. Some people would say, look, somehow there was a discharge of human waste from an airplane. Could it have been that?
People did say that. The media came out. They asked the FAA, and we found that, first of all, airliners do not discharge waste. Those are closed containers.
No, you're absolutely
correct.
Secondly,
it's blue-tinted. It's dyed with a disinfectant.
Blue.
There is no possibility, said the health inspectors who came out there, that this is human waste from an aircraft. And in a few seconds, I'm going to demonstrate that what we found, what this lab found this week, was certainly not human waste. I just got the lab report in my hands. This is science. It's signed off. We have the numbers. I will admit this is only one test. We have a second test taken from another state of similar substance, and we're in the process of checking that to see if we get a cross correlation. But here's what we found. Here's what the lab found from this goo. Again, a very good clean sample.
Mm-hmm.
They found Pseudomonas fluorescens.
Mm-hmm.
Seen that before in similar samples of the goo. Again, this causes very bad, can cause very bad blood infections in humans. The Pseudomonas can use and does use hydrocarbons. It loves them. It dines on petroleum. Pseudomonas fluorescens was manufactured in great quantities at one time to consume oil spills. So you could put it in something like JP8 ethylene dibromide and it would have a perfect matrix to survive and thrive as it fell to the ground. We did not find, I must quickly say, ethylene dibromide in this particular sample. We weren't looking for it. When we went back, the lab technician said that they would probably have noted it. We did find something else, though. We found a fungus, Streptomyces. This is very unusual because you don't find this in outdoor samples. Hardly ever. This
what is very unusual. What is it?
Well, you make streptomycin. You make a vaccine with this particular fungus. You make vaccine in a laboratory. Now, this wasn't the vaccine. This was the progenitor, if you like. We don't understand what it was doing in a sample with pathogens. But we also were interested in the lab report that found a bacillus, another one of these names that a very long name. Let's just say, and this is very, very telling, this particular bacillus contains a restriction enzyme. What's that? Well,
yeah.
It's an enzyme that can be used for manipulating DNA. It would be used in a research lab. It would never, ever be found in the natural environment. In fact, Art, it is on the U.S. government's rebase list of restricted enzymes.
What?
It's on the list of restricted enzymes because it can be used to shift the DNA from one organism into another.
Oh, my God. You know, this just gets worse and worse and worse by the minute.
I agree.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Phyllis.
Hi, Phyllis.
Alexandria, Virginia, WWRC out of Bethesda.
Right.
3 weeks ago, I got a survey call from my health insurance. And I'm 58, and I thought they would worry about pneumonia shots if I was a little older.
Mm-hmm.
But the last question they asked me on the survey was, have you had your pneumonia shot? And I said, no. Well, today, I received a card that says, take part in the health insurance, I'm not going to name it, pneumococcal immunization program. Let's see, call your primary care physician, discuss it with your primary care, fill out the form and return the questionnaire, use blue or black ink, mark the appropriate boxes of responses.
Right.
Put down the date that you received the vaccine. Then there's another box that says, my primary care physician has advised me not to take it, and I do not, the third one is, I do not intend to receive it.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought, after what I'd heard on your show, that was very, very odd.
It's especially odd that we are not hearing from the Center of Disease Control or our government saying, hey, folks, we have a pneumonia epidemic, take the shots. We're getting silence. Therefore, I can only conclude that this is not a, quote, normal outbreak, or they're trying to hide something. And yet, not only do we have a caller, a Phyllis, with a insurance form, we also have, I'm in contact with one gentleman in the hospital who was given a very lengthy questionnaire saying, if you do not fill this out and answer all of these questions, we're not going to treat you.
Hmm. Well, I think that's against the law.
All right.
If you go in, particularly in an emergency situation, and you're in some distress, respiratory, or something like that, and they don't treat you, they get big fines.
I hope so.
They get in big trouble. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hello.
Hello, this is Jeannie. Art, it's a pleasure to speak to you.
And to you. Where are you?
I live in the L.A. area in California.
Yes, okay.
Okay, anyways, I have one question and I have a couple other comments for you. In July, I came down with meningitis, and I'm very isolated. Well, I'm pretty isolated where I live. I live up in the hills of the San Fernando Valley. And I also am retired, so I'm not working. I'm not around a lot of people, so who knows how I got the meningitis.
Mm-hmm.
About 3 weeks ago, I saw a very narrow X. Obviously, here in the L.A. area, we have a lot of airplane traffic.
Of course.
And these it was like very narrow X. And now, how high are these usually? And this thing did not dissipate, and I could see it moving very slowly, but not like clouds where you'll see a little bit of a change in the shape.
Sure.
And so, anyways, that's my first question on that, and then I'll have a couple comments just briefly afterwards.
Okay. William, is that...
Hi, William.
Is that...
Hello, Gene. Your meningitis could be, underlying could be, could have been caused by an infection of Pseudomonas aeruginosa. It is known for causing meningitis, and I keep seeing meningitis among developed symptoms in my investigation into these chemtrails that are woven at two altitudes, very high, in excess of 34,000, 35,000 feet.
Uh-huh.
You can just get a sense that the aircraft is at very high altitude, hard to pick out any detail. And also at around 9,000 to 10,000 feet, where you can see the aircraft more clearly, those two altitudes.
How long do these stay in the sky usually?
For a couple of hours,
okay,
or even an afternoon, depending on how thickly they're laid down. Multiple aircraft laying a grid-like pattern can make these things persist for an afternoon.
Well,
a single aircraft, an hour or 2 hours or longer.
This was an afternoon, and at the time that I had the meningitis, there was an outbreak of approximately 400 people in the L.A. area that contracted it.
Oh,
okay.
Really?
Yeah. Well, thank you. Oh, and to my comments, I said my prayers for Richard, and I'm glad that he's okay.
Thank you.
And
you might say some for William while you're at it after listening this morning.
Really? Yes. Lots of prayers for you, too. You will be safe. We will take care of you. My second comment does have to do with safety and health. Have you ever heard about the use of castor bean to simulate a massive heart attack and it cannot be traced without...
Well, you know what, thank you, what Dr. Day said. Dr. Day said anybody can cause a murder, but it takes a real expert to cause a natural death. That's what Dr. Day said. I'm Art Bell. William Thomas is my guest, and this, of course, is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 17th, 1999. Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from March 17th, 1999.
William Thomas is my guest. Skies of blue, white clouds, and chemtrails.
Spreading, shaking hands, saying how do you do?
maybe they'll even get smart, and when they grow up, they won't self-destruct.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price. The package includes podcasting, which automatically downloads shows for you, and the iPhone app. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. That's over 1,000 shows for you to collect and enjoy. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up. You never know what you'll hear on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
You know, there is terrorism out there. So in an effort to try to fight it or combat it, we give up these rights. I'm convinced that there are groups out there, sinister, powerful groups, that would create this terror to continue to control us.
I think you're absolutely correct. But of course, anybody that's followed the process of government throughout history, once a government has been given a certain amount of power, it always seeks more. And to suggest that our government is different because it's America, I guess that just shows how historically ignorant the American people have become. Because in a real sense, these things are our fault. Americans are, in fact, now trading liberty for security. Every day, this is going to happen now in our future, that we're going to allow this. It's just a matter of time.
Now, let's go back to the night of March 17th, 1999, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Here's William Thomas again. William, I've got two things I want to read you very quickly, then we'll go back to the phones.
Okay.
William mentioned intestinal problems. This is from Don in California. I'm a healthy, active male, 33 years old, just after Christmas. I developed intestinal pain and flu-like symptoms, no fever, but very tired. The symptoms would come and go every few days. It lasted until late February. I remember telling friends, this is the weirdest flu I've ever had. Just when you're normal, it hits you again. Then about a week before I got sick, I noticed a sticky film on my vehicles, plural, in the morning. At that time, I told a friend of mine how I'd wash the car, and then it'd be all dirty again the next morning with this damn oily film. It's now beginning to make sense to me. Don in California. Sound about right?
Sounds about right. I just sigh when I hear that story because I've heard others like it. And we seem to be going from upper respiratory to gastrointestinal with this stuff.
Yeah. And this, Art, listening to Mr. Thomas talk tonight, he mentioned meningitis. This big warning at the top of the facts. It says, Art, here in Northeast Ohio, this is from Dale in Akron, in the last 2 months we've had 4 cases of meningitis. None of the people ever had contact with any of the others. 2 hospitalized, 2 died. 1 a 4-year-old, 1 child, and the other a 27-year-old female teacher. It all happened within 5 weeks, and we've got contrails here all the time. Possibly a connection?
I do have reports from Akron on contrails, and I would ask listeners to please participate in this very important investigation for all of us by sending me news clippings of these meningitis outbreaks and similar outbreaks of disease. You'll find my address on my website.
All right. And again, if you want to email, if you're in the media, you want to follow up on the story, you damn well ought to want to follow up on the story. It's Wilco, W-I-L-C-O, at islandnet.com. One word, islandnet.com. And you'll be able to email William directly. His website is linked to my website. It's got tildes and stuff in it, so if that's hard for you, go to the website you're used to, mine, and just scroll down to William Thomas's name and click on the link. You can do more reading. His book is Bringing the War Home, and you can get it by calling 1-888-690-1277. All right. First time, no, I shouldn't be going there yet. Let's go here. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas. Where are you, please?
Hi there. This is Marty, and I'm listening in Brooklyn, New York on 770 WABC.
WABC, yes, sir.
And I have a comment and a question for William.
Sure.
My first a comment, and it has something to do with the story that Art said at the just after the break, because 2 years ago I was down in Tampa, Florida, and in the morning I left with my cousin to go get cigarettes, and the car was covered with dust, it looked like.
Dust?
And, yeah, it was just the best way I can explain it, as if somebody was sawing wood around it, but it was everywhere, even. And I asked him what it was, what is this? And he complained and he moaned, and he said, well, sometimes the planes come over and they dust for potato bugs, he said.
Mm-hmm.
And, I figured he knows, you know, and he complained that it would leave spots on his car, and they wouldn't tell anybody when they were doing this. They would just do it randomly. And I thought, if they are doing that, if it is, you know, just innocently spraying for bugs, I know that, William, that you're trying to get information out, and I appreciate that. And I think I applaud you for doing it, but I think some people might be getting terrified unduly. And that brings me to my question.
No, that is right. I mean, how the hell is somebody supposed to know the difference between contrails and chemtrails?
That's my question.
And I understand that this is going to cause great worry. It's worrying me. So, yeah, to you, William, again, I guess that we were talking about that a little while ago. God, how do we help people understand what they should be concerned about and what's okay? Life in this country is getting tougher by the minute.
I agree, and again, I really don't want to be a purveyor of fear. I hope I can be a messenger for awareness and public action toward their elected officials and toward the media to instigate an investigation, demand some answers and accountability. We have enough stress in our lives already. There are plenty of crop dusters flying around spraying for various things. By the way, you don't want to be exposed to that spray any more than anything else. That's very nasty, those pesticides. In fact, as we found tonight, some of these pesticide elements or substances or compounds are being found in Joe Burton's body. So we don't want to be exposed to that, nor do we want to run from every aircraft and every normal, legitimate contrail that we see. But if the contrails linger, or especially if they are being dispensed behind an aircraft at a fairly low altitude, that is an aircraft, a big jet airplane that is not high and hard to see in the sky, but pretty much right up close and personal, beware. There's no possible way contrails can form from a jet aircraft at 9 or 10,000 feet. That is a very good indicator that something's going on. An X pattern in the sky is also another sure mark of this particular beast.
And you've had eyewitnesses say, through telescopes and binoculars, they have actually seen this stuff coming out nozzles.
Absolutely correct. People viewing these aircraft with high-power binoculars and telescopes have independently told me that they have seen the probe, the big boom, coming, angling down from the rear of the aircraft. Again, we're seeing these chemtrails coming from the tails of identified tanker aircraft with engines on their wings.
Here is a fax from a physician who I will not name. Art, whether these are epidemiologic studies of an offensive or defensive nature and or related to electromagnetic experimentation and or, question mark, this is not good news. And we're worried about Joe Camel. Where's George Carlin when you need him? Seriously, Art, this is serious. As usual, you're at least 3 to 6 months or more ahead of the news media curve. We do a lot of that here, William. We're ahead of the regular media by quite a bit frequently. And I've got a feeling this is another one of those times. We need to get this into, in order to either knock it down or to prove it, you've got to go to the next step. And the next step means the New York Times. It means something in Time magazine or something on the Associated Press. It means that. That's the only way you're going to get the kind of oomph you need, study-wise and money-wise, to either prove this or knock it down.
You're absolutely right. My last 8 weeks of research have made me put aside all paying project, and I'm going along on donations from listeners such as the folks listening in tonight. Well, I very much appreciate their contributions to this study. I would delight, really, in having this knocked down and disproven so I could get my life back and go on with other things. Art, I am convinced that is not going to happen. While I am not certain, and I do not have a proof to make assertions of why this is going on, I can definitely say and prove that it is going on. We are being sprayed with something. They do contain pathogens. They do appear to be altering the weather.
Hey, William, how old are you?
50.
50. How's your heart?
Great.
Heart's in good shape?
You bet.
Just checking. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Ben from KSFO San Francisco 560.
Yes, sir.
Hello, William.
Hello.
Thank you for your good work.
You're welcome.
I only started noticing these, what I've been calling them, air sprays because of Art Bell, in over the San Francisco Bay on January 29th.
Well, they've been testing on you guys before.
February 10th, since it was all on clear days and with a sea breeze blowing to the east, I thought, okay. But on the 22nd, they sprayed, and I got an illness, which I've never had and never heard of, that entered my every joint in my back. Took 4 days to continue down the back all the way to the feet. Meanwhile, again, now we have the Marines doing their so-called war games here.
Yeah, I hear they're attacking your
Monterey.
Okay. No, they're in San Francisco. They're in Oakland.
Oh, really?
And they're supposedly, they've given many different stories. First of all, they needed to check out their new Palm computers for downtown metropolitan to protect the people. And so there was a big uproar. And then the Pentagon released a newsflash that the real purpose of this was to stir up volunteers for the military. However, when I came home tonight, I noticed that they had laid another 3 strips over Oakland, directly over where Lawrence Livermore is. And listening to you talk, here's my thought, my question. This sounds like some kind of horrific, devious, unbelievable combination of, because for a while I was thinking maybe they're trying to lay down a cover against the guidance systems if at other times they're not laying sprays of other things, because they're obviously sprays. And now what you're talking about, HAARP, sounds like the original radio magnetic accelerators. The whole thing is just
incredible.
Do you want to monologue on that a little bit?
William?
Yes, we can say that there is no possible way that an artificial cloud cover can be laid over the entire continental United States or even maintained over regions to hide military or other activity from photographic satellites. It's irrelevant anyway, since other satellites use radar imaging that is very precise and would look right through your cloud cover. So I'm not quite buying that one. People said, what about these corona mass ejections on the sun? Even as we talk tonight, we're having the biggest solar flares in recorded history. Huge things, gamma rays, X-rays, all heading towards the ionosphere that HAARP is messing with, trying to tear a hole in.
Mm-hmm.
Are they laying down a cloud cover to protect us from the rays of these solar explosions? Well, sorry, the gamma and X-rays go right through the cloud cover, so I think we'll have to discard that notion as well. I can only hope that the Marines in San Francisco are not using live ammunition as they did in Texas.
I know. It says on my website right now, we keep track of this literally by the minute. Current solar X-ray activity is M-class flare right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I pass that one on. First-time caller line, you're on the air with William Thomas.
Good evening.
Good evening. Morning, actually. Of course, you might be in Hawaii. It'd still be evening. Where are you, sir?
Birmingham, Alabama.
No, it's definitely morning in Alabama.
Yes, sir.
Okay. You're on the air.
From WERC 960 in Birmingham.
Thank you.
Mr. Thomas, I saw the rainbow between two contrails this afternoon in Birmingham, Alabama.
Could you see it with your naked eye, or were you wearing sunglasses at the time?
My naked eye, and I hopefully have some photographs being developed as I speak to confirm this, and also there's a massive grid patterns over Birmingham this afternoon.
A what? I'm sorry?
Massive grid patterns.
Yes, Birmingham has been on my chemtrail radar recently, as well as in previous months, for heavy spraying. Is there any way, sir, that that could have been a normal rainbow?
No, sir, it couldn't. It lasted for a long time. It did not even increase in size or anything. It stayed between two chemtrails that were going from east to west.
Sounds like a chemical signature to me.
Now, William, you said that what kind of sunglasses?
Polarizing sunglasses. Even normal sunglasses should do the trick, but polarizing sunglasses really bring this out.
Really bring it out. So if you're looking at what's a contrail, or you suspect might be a chemtrail, with these glasses, if it's a normal contrail, it's just going to look white, right?
Exactly.
But if it's a chemtrail, you're now going to see sort of a rainbow of colors in it. Is that also accurate?
Let's put a maybe in front of that. I'm not certain you'll see it on every observation. In other words, I don't want to tell listeners, if you put on sunglasses and don't see a rainbow in the trail,
that it's okay.
It's okay. I don't want to suggest that. Yeah. On the other hand, of course, if you do see it, you are seeing chemicals in the sky.
Okay, but wouldn't people say, look, a contrail is water vapor. Water vapor, as seen in a rainbow, when we have a rainbow in our sky, acts as a prism, and so you might see multiple colors in water vapor. What about that?
Try it. I've looked at a lot of contrails. I've been a pilot. Try it. I've never seen such a phenomena, a rainbow in a normal ice crystal contrail. The feeling I got making my observation a couple of weeks ago was an intuitive feeling that this is an oily or chemical compound, and I think your listeners will recognize the phenomenon of oil in a puddle in the water.
You get swirls
and the
colors.
Same, feeling and sight of this phenomena in the sky.
William, we're out of time. Your book is Bringing the War Home, $22.95. Now, if you would like to, if you're in the press, you would like to make further inquiries, maybe do your own investigation. Maybe you're not one of those lazy little bastards, lazy little media people who don't follow up on things and don't really do their own investigation and run with the pack. If you're not one of the pack people, you can contact William at Wilco, W-I-L-C-O, at IslandNet. That's one word, islandnet.com. And I guess that's about all we're going to have time for right now. William, my friend, you've done it again and scared the hell out of me.
Art, if you see any white aircraft unmarked without windows, get inside.
Have a good morning, William.
I will, and thank you, Art.
Thanks for being here. Take care. That's it. Good night.